Woohoo! You. Welcome to the Some Work All Play podcast. We are so happy to be with you today.
Happy Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
And I'm staring at the most classic David Roach vantage point on this Tuesday. Can you guess what it is?
Oh my gosh, I have no idea. All I do know is that I was just having a reflection that the lights are out in our bathroom and have been for the last 3 months. So I haven't looked at myself in the mirror almost ever in 3 months, so I truly have no idea.
It all looks good. I'm about to say something exciting, but actually the lights happen out in our bathroom, and to solve it, I'm not going to go to Home Depot to get lights, because that's a little bit complicated, like fuck light bulbs. Yeah. I'm going to get a lava lamp on Amazon.
I think that
just like our bathroom is weird enough as it is. It's like janky from like the 80s.
Yeah.
It's got a Believe sign in there from Ted Lasso. It's got a picture of you peeing in this like beautiful area on our wall, and it needs a lava lamp.
That's one of my favorite things about your bathroom decorations is that you took the money to buy like a 20-inch print of me taking a piss in nature to put on our wall. Granted, no one can see it now because it's pitch black. Thankfully, we'll have that lava lamp soon. Okay, so now tell me, what do I look like right now? What is the vantage point?
Well, it was $12.95 to get the print of you up peeing in the bathroom, and it's so worth it. Because every time someone goes in there to pee, they're like, look at David!
Yeah.
That's so cool! There's also a Believe sign on the wall. It's great. Okay, but my vantage point is the fact that you have a heart-shaped wound on your hand.
Oh,
and it's so quintessential, David Roach. I love it so much.
Yeah, well, this weekend, I was running with the world-famous Drew Holman on James Peak, and we were having a very deep conversation, and in that deep conversation, I ate shit as I do when I'm on trails, and you know, got a little cut up in that process. And yeah, it is a heart, so that's pretty cool. Should I post a picture of my heart scab online?
You should, actually.
Really?
You know, I'm not like a huge fan of like posting scabs or toenails or other things on Instagram. I'm like, leave that for the bathroom wall.
Yeah,
that's what you need. That's like, that belongs in like the $12.95 blow up print and nowhere else. But that heart shaped scab is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You should be proud of that.
Thank you, but I don't think I will, because the one place I have a pet peeve, you know, I'm all about be your full, true, authentic self. But please don't post pictures of your messy feet.
Is that
on
a hot
Instagram.
Take? That sounds That's, like a hot take.
That is my hot take.
No feet on Instagram.
Well, okay.
Censor that shit.
No, regular feet are okay.
Yes, yes.
Even like nasty regular feet. But I don't need to see feet wounds.
That's
like,
true.
Runners have this habit of being like, hey, swipe over for like the worst foot you've ever seen. Like toenails falling off, 18 blisters, just to try to show you carnage. I'm like, who is this serving? And if it is serving a single one of your viewers, you probably don't want to serve that person. They probably
have
something going on that you should like make them charge you. You should start an OnlyFans for those pictures.
They should be carded. Do not serve them. Do not serve them feet.
Okay, so we're bringing the best episode for you today. No feet pictures, but a lot of feet energy, really sexy feet energy. So here's a roadmap. We're going to do some quick hitters from our lives, including big dump truck energy. That's become extra relevant recently. Talk about some running news, including Courtney to UTMB. That's wild. Studies on hyperhydration, strength work and mitochondria, and morning versus PM training. A recap of the Tour de France Femmes. We're going to have some really fun conversations there. Talking about hormones and injuries. Maybe a discussion of liquid fueling, including some reviews. Hot takes, and then two amazing listener corners. Stick around for that. That's going
to
be awesome.
We're on a quest on here to talk about Courtney in every single podcast episode. You know, it's possible. I think it would be highly relevant. I think we could do it for, you know, every episode this year.
Courtney DeWalter is freaking bonkers.
Bananas. It's so bananas.
So many bananas.
Yeah.
And a wild amount of bananas. It's actually really interesting. So we were joking on a few episodes ago that we were going to include her in the title and get lots of listens. Of course, that episode and the episode where we talked about her before both got our most listens ever by a substantial margin. The name Courtney launches us up to be the top running podcast, not just in the US, not just in Canada, in the whole world. So I guess Courtney has that international flavor.
Well, we should try and see what happens if we just put Shortney in the title.
Oh, yeah. Well, that probably wouldn't do the same.
I bet you it would. I bet you it would do better.
It would.
Shortney is pretty darn cool.
Yeah. I haven't seen any athletes wearing Shortneys yet, which are the shorts that Solomon developed that are long shorts like Courtney DeWalter wears during her races. But I definitely need a pair. I'm a huge fan of the long shorts. I've recently been trialing some of your short shorts.
I know. I'm like, what are you doing? You showed up for a run with Drew,
yeah,
which was on our Saturday date day. We pivoted our date to Sunday, which I was like totally fine with because I love Drew. I was like, David, you need to show up ready to go.
Yeah.
You need to show up extra sexy. You need to show up ready to talk. But you are wearing my purple shorts.
Yeah.
Why?
I think they were your Smash and Basham shorts from Rabbit.
The Amanda Basham shorts, yes.
They were about an inch long, and I was wearing them because I don't do laundry, and I really don't know where any of my clothes have gone. Hey, if you're out there and you want to send clothes to somebody, you might get a shout out on the podcast.
Well, people have sent you clothes. Where have they gone?
I don't know. know, Megan. You tell me.
Well, I have the same question for you because you borrow my socks and they like disappear out into the universe. And I'm like, David, like there's a lot of entropy in our lives, but it just doesn't like swallow up whole sets of socks and shorts. Like, where do they go?
Well, you know how there's that dad joke that like, oh, the left socks in the dryer end up in like an alternate dimension.
Yeah.
I'm actually pretty sure that every single thing I've ever owned is in an alternate dimension, or maybe all of our lights are out and they're just hiding in a corner somewhere that we can't see. Okay. So speaking of our lives being in disarray, recently we got some ambient noise in our house, which were birds chirping. And it was honestly quite delightful until we realized that the birds were chirping not outside, but somewhere from inside the house, probably a vent. And we're just essentially like, what do we do about this now? But we're bringing that big bird chirping, relaxing vibe. And I don't know, what do you think we should do about this?
Well, people pay big money for this. Yeah. It's very delightful. I mean, it's almost the exact bird chirping that you would get on one of those like calm apps.
Definitely.
Except they're living in this like liminal space between outdoors and indoors, because I think they're in this like vent that's coming in from the outdoor area.
Yeah.
But they've become like part of our family, honestly. Every time we leave the house, I tell Addie how long we're going for. Yeah. And I hold it up on my hands. I'm like, Addie, 3 hours. And I held up three fingers. And now I tell the birds too. I'm like, birds, we'll be back in 3 hours. Don't miss up. So I don't know what to do, because clearly like we should actually probably handle this before they destroy the insides of our house.
But why? Birds don't destroy anything.
Birds poop just like all of the best of us.
That's true, actually.
Can you imagine like how much debris is accumulating inside our house?
But I mean, how much does a bird really poop over time?
A lot. Have you seen like, birds shit a lot, just like the best of us. But still, like, I think we should probably do something about it. But I am pretty sad because, like, there are little babies in there.
I think we should do nothing about it, much like we've done about the light, and just see how this plays out. That's my plan.
Just have an entire flock of birds accumulating inside our house.
Yeah, well, I think this is important to talk about because every time we'll sometimes get emails from listeners, especially women listeners, that are sometimes like, you guys have so much going on and you have your shit together. And we clearly don't, or we're just developing a bigger family with a lot of like pterodactyls apparently in our ceiling.
Well, we have our shit together by accumulating a lot of shit is what they're referring to, but it is pretty peaceful.
Yeah.
And I think this week we probably have to take care of it, but I want them to like evacuate calmly. I don't know if like pest control agencies do that.
We'll figure it out a way. Yeah. I don't care. What we'll do is we'll scope out, we'll contact multiple different groups and see who can rehome these birds in a place that's just as delightful as our bathroom vent. Okay, so speaking of inspiring women all over the world, I posted an Instagram story that I wanted to talk about because I got probably 100 responses from it with people just saying this is the coolest thing they'd ever seen. So what you did when we did our bike ride yesterday on our date day is we pulled over at like mile 5. I went to go pee in the bushes because, you know, I'm a normal person.
And it took you like 18 years. I was like, what are you doing, buddy? We gotta go.
Megan, my prostate's the size of a grapefruit. What am I supposed to do? Meanwhile, you just stood there on the side of the road and did this maneuver. What would you call the maneuver you did?
Well, this is the side short pee. We've talked about this a lot on here on the podcast. It is so convenient we've been really focusing on hydration in our household. So I feel like I have to pee so often at the start of rides and runs, and I dread it. But you know what? The side short pee, I can pee in under like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
But I did it in bib shorts.
Bib shorts. And 1 foot stayed clipped into the pedals. So I saw Megan just pull, and it was amazing. You couldn't tell.
You were speechless.
I have never seen anything that made me more excited to be a human. Because you look at someone being able to do that, and I'm like, well, what can I do? If I put my mind to it, I would have thought that's impossible. Like, I have the plumbing for it, and even I wouldn't be able to do that. How did it happen, Megan?
Oh, well, it happened through a lot of failure, as the best things do in life. So I trialed this out this week on one of my earlier rides.
Yeah.
And I had to pee like twice within the confines of the first 15 minutes. And I was pissed. I was like, damn, I like just started this ride. I have a limited amount of time out here. And I tried it. The first time I peed on my hand, the second time I peed on my bike, and the third time was a success and I nailed it. So you really just have to like embrace failure and all of life's greatest achievements.
I like to think of you on that third time when it finally worked.
Oh, I was so pumped.
Much like Robert Oppenheimer watching the first nuclear test go off, and he's like, I am become death, destroyer of worlds. You're like, I am become pee, pisser on the world. You're so proud of yourself.
It was a big moment in my life.
It was cool. And I mean, just genuinely points out, reminder to our female listeners, the side short pee is worth a try. It's difficult, but you have changed lives through this method, and I think it might be our most important contribution to the world.
Well, I thought about that as I was out there. I was like, you know, I've done like a lot of research in like female athlete space, but I was like, I'm pretty sure the side short pee is way more important.
Okay. And then we want to talk briefly about the hydration comment Megan just mentioned. So we've been thinking a lot about sweating and hydration recently, and we ended up getting our sweat tests last week where we measured the sodium content in our sweat. So this is very cool from a performance perspective because this sweat rate can vary highly amongst individuals. Some people will have salt rates as low as 200 to 300 milligrams per 32 ounces fluid, which is very low. Other people will be up near 3,000 or at least 2,500 milligrams. And there's seemingly no difference between those people other than this variable. So it's incredibly important to understand, and the baseline suggestions that you have might depend very heavily on your genetics.
And that variability is wild. And if you multiply like the standard fueling and hydration recommendations across a 100-mile ultra for athletes that are at the ends of those spectrums, it's like, well, those two athletes are going to get fucked. Yeah. Like, you know, it's really hard to control for that. So we went in and we did the sweat test, which measures the sodium concentration. And it was so delightful because when I picture sweat test, I picture like running on a treadmill, really exerting myself, pouring in sweat.
Oh, it sounds horrible.
Which is actually, I kind of like, I have like a masochistic feeling on that. I'm like, yeah, bring that on. But it was actually really nice just to sit on the couch.
Yeah.
And they attached a sensor and they measured the sodium concentration. And it was very delightful.
So it was so interesting because you are just sitting there and they're instigating sweat. And as they do this, you're watching your sweat pour up through this thing. And I was really excited because my entire life, I've assumed that my salt rate is through the roof.
You've talked about it constantly.
Yes.
I'm gonna actually like make a little fun of you here. You're like, I'm so salty. Yeah. I'm in the 99th percentile of sweating and salting. And yeah, you really like, took to that.
And I have a lot of evidence though. I mean, literally, you've seen the salt on me after every single exercise I ever do, especially hard exercise. I've learned that I need a ton of salt supplementation within the context of my exercise. I bragged to Precision Hydration where we were getting the salt test done that I'm going to break this machine. You're never going to have seen anything like me. And what do you know? Megan and I were the same exact number, basically right below the median.
You were right at average. Were you disappointed? I feel like there was a part of you that was rooting for yourself. I mean, it's much better.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You don't want to be like 3 standard deviations above the mean because it's very hard to keep that coming.
Especially, yeah. I mean, I feel like it actually plays into fatigue resistance. It plays into so many variables that we see in ultras. But I felt like there was a part of you, because you had like talked this up, that you were like rooting for this to be epic, which I think is almost a natural human instinct. It reminds me of going into an MRI sometimes after you've been injured for a little bit. Yeah. And you're almost like, I want that MRI to give me answers.
Yeah.
Even though like 5 days down the road, like the type of athlete that I am, I'm like, no, I actually want the clean MRI. But there's like an intrinsic part of human behavior that's rooting for an answer or cause or to like understand. Was that how you were going into this?
I've actually seen that in athletes too, in MRIs, where they're like, they want at some level a stress injury just to explain their symptoms.
Or not a stress injury, but it's like you want something to be like, oh, well, this is an explanation. Like I'm not, sometimes I feel like sometimes I feel like I'm like imagining things as an athlete when there is pain. And it's like, no, I actually don't want this to be phantom pain. And I think the same, like there's a corollary there, like, oh, I don't want to be a phantom sweater. I want to be a real 99th percentile sweater.
Well, that's basically what it comes down to, is I want to be 99th percentile in everything I do, including salting. So now that I know my salt rate is a little bit like more normal, basically I think it just means my sweat rate, so the amount of liquid content in my sweat, is quite high, which I do have confirmation of some sweat tests I've done in the past just on my own, measuring my weight and things. So basically, I think you probably need more salt than you think you do, is our conclusion from these tests. Mm-hmm. The general median is around 1,000 milligrams per 32 ounces of fluid that you take in. So think about that number. Consider one of these sweat tests. Precision gives great ones. We'll have a discount code probably next week for those, because we're trying to, you know, use these for our athletes too. So understanding that number, I think, is really important. But if you're somewhere else on the spectrum and you take in amount of sodium that's just off of your genetic baseline, you're probably going to get fucked later on. And so it's why it gets so complicated, and understanding your body probably does require at least a little bit of testing.
Yeah. I feel like sweat testing is so helpful if you fall on that outlier end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And for me, I assumed, I was like, you know, I can do runs and do very little amounts of hydration. And I've been working on that as an athlete. I've been trying to hydrate a lot more, but I assumed I was at the very far left end of the spectrum, but we were almost equal, which is shocking to me. So since I've gotten that sweat test, I've been really focusing on like pre-run, pre-bike hydration, making sure I'm getting in enough salt out there. And I think it's helped a lot.
You know what my new theory is that I just thought of? The machine was broken. It was just telling everyone the same thing. Because this gets back to our ideas about fatigue resistance / durability, how mm-hmm. athletes perform at the end of events. One of the things we have seen is that athletes with lower sweat rates generally have higher fatigue resistance. Whether that's mm-hmm. a causation or correlation thing, we don't know. Or if it's just a spurious thing we're noticing in general, we're not sure. But I just assumed yours was really low because your fatigue resistance is off the charts. What I think might be the case, and we'll have to do follow-up tests, is if your salting is normal, but your sweat rate is low, whereas my sweat rate is high, but my salting is normal. So I still need a lot more sodium because I have to also take in a lot of fluid to replace what I'm losing.
Well, I think it's important to mention too. So the type of tests that they're doing, they measure the genetic predisposition you have to creating sweat. Yeah. And actually the way that they got this was through cystic fibrosis. So
How cool is that?
Cystic fibrosis patients, it's really fascinating actually. They have a CTFR protein mutation.
Yeah.
And this causes an inability. It causes issues with like chloride transport, and it thus results in abnormalities in terms of sweat. So they have really salty sweat, like yeah. 2 to 5 times the normal amounts of sodium loss in their sweat, which is pretty wild. But so they took this test from cystic fibrosis and applied it to athletes,
yeah.
which is so cool. So it measures your genetic predisposition to sweating. So this number actually doesn't change either throughout the context of an athlete's life, but the amount of sweat, so the amount of actual like water and like sweat content will.
Yeah. And what I loved about what they did with the information is they gave a lot of tips on how to prepare for races. We're going to talk a little bit about hyperhydration mm-hmm. in a few minutes about like preparing for events with, you know, increasing the amount of like essentially liquid content in your blood via hydration mechanisms. And they tell you how to do that in practice using their products. Very cool stuff. So we'll get a little bit into that, but I was very, very excited. And also, honestly, a little bit demoralized, but I didn't break the machine.
You got quiet on the way home.
I did.
I was like, he's a little sad.
I am a little sad.
Yeah.
Because granted, I still think I need a lot of sodium. Like I do need it.
Yes. Yeah.
Because 1,000 milligrams is still a lot. It's mm-hmm. still, I was probably underdoing it. But I was hoping I would beat you, and I can't even beat you with that. You're just beating me at everything. It's unfair.
Well, we were both average.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Final thing before we get to some running news that we just briefly wanted to mention is we got a new toy for baby Leo, and it gives the greatest quote of all fucking time. So on the podcast in the past, you have said that you have what, Megan?
I have dump truck days. So yes. Every once in a while when you just feel like you're feeling bigger inside your own skin, which happens yeah. to me. I mean, it happens to all of us. And I've learned to embrace those days. As I'm running uphill, I'm like, I'm a dump truck. I got this dump truck energy. No one can stop me. And usually, actually, those are the days when yeah. I feel the best, which I think is something interesting for athletes to think about. But what do you know? So Leo's toy. So I got this new dump truck for him. I was so excited because it was his first dump
yeah,
truck.
Yeah, yeah. And it was so cool. But the reason I just stopped you there is right now I want to insert on the podcast what this dump truck says, you know, when you have this context.
Do you want to do it now or maybe at the end? Because it's such a catchy tune
yeah.
that I'm afraid if you're like us, it's going to infiltrate all of your thoughts. So after we got this dump truck,
yeah.
I literally could not think of anything all day besides of this tune. Like we recorded yeah. a Patreon episode and it was really fun, but literally my brain was just singing the song throughout the entire loop.
No, we have to insert it, Megan. It's so much more important than anything we've ever said on the podcast. You know, we've talked about really serious topics, death, you know, religion, love.
Birds in our bathroom.
Equally important. But never before have we said something as important as this.
I'm a powerful dump truck. I rumble down the road, moving my load from here to there.
And this played. So when we got the dump truck on Friday, I was walking out the door and it was 5 a.m. I've been yeah. trying to get in all my runs before Leo wakes up in the morning, which is a really fun challenge for me. And as I was walking out the door, it just randomly activated and sang this to me. Yeah. And it was like the best energy for the day.
So remember, we are powerful dump trucks.
That was an interesting intonation you took there.
Well, I think that's what it does, right? It does like the higher at the end type thing.
It says, I'm a powerful dump truck.
That's what I tried to do.
Yeah, you went down.
I don't have that perfect pitch like you do.
Oh, my pitch is far. People are like, guys, stop singing on the podcast. Yeah,
but remember, big dump truck energy. That's what we want to embrace out there on the trails. That power is what you need. So let this children's toy be your coach.
And put in that diesel energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fill it up with diesel gas. Yeah. Okay, what is your diesel gas equivalent this week?
Oh, like in terms of food or how yeah, I feel?
What's your food go-to this week? What are you fueling your tank with?
Okay. We just got a shipment of groceries because we didn't have enough time to go to the grocery store. And they were out of the usual salt and vinegar kettle chips that we get.
Yeah.
So I got a whole thing of different types of sweet potato chips.
Oh, fun.
So this week I'm going to be housing some sweet potato chips after exercise.
I'm so excited.
Also got Coca-Colas for the fridge.
Those are great. I actually had some before this podcast. It's great energy. Yes. Yeah.
Do you have anything that you're going for?
Well, okay. I've recently just had like blocks of cheese.
You have.
So Tillamook cheddar cheese is amazing. And I kind of just like carry it around the house with me and cut off little like shreds of cheese. Actually like big chunks of cheese.
It feels like I'm living with the Chuck E. Cheese big animatronic mouse that just like there's a big tooth mark in the cheese but it's not even in the fridge.
No,
just,
I cut it.
Sometimes
I literally have not once gone in with my face, though I should.
Okay, well, your knife looks a lot like teeth marks, that's for sure. And you've just been all into cheese and crackers
all the time. Like a freaking charcuterie board.
Yeah.
I, in my life, have never made a charcuterie board. I am not organized enough for that. I am not artistic enough for it. But like, I kind of didn't understand it for a really long period of time.
Yeah.
But I am doing the janky ash charcuterie board by just carrying around a block of cheese and crackers. And it's so good. Okay, I get it.
You're not as online as I am, so you probably don't know this reference, but over the last few weeks, there's been a meme on the internet called Girl Dinner, which essentially is what girls eat when they're not, like when they're just alone in their house. And what it comes down to is essentially all they do is a cheap charcuterie board. All they do is cheese and crackers. So this whole time, Megan, you've become a stereotype of girl dinner, but at every single meal.
Well, I'm pretty sure that if girl dinner is a charcuterie board, I'm pretty sure woman ass dinner is just carrying around the cheese and crackers and skipping the whole board and being like, I don't have time for this shit.
Just stick it down the gullet. Yeah. Okay, on to some running news. The first thing that we want to talk about is Courtney going to UTMB. She just announced last week that after setting the course record at Western States, after setting the course record at the Hard Rock 100, she is going to line up at Ultra Trail Mont Blanc in a couple weeks here. Wow, I'm pretty speechless. When I saw that, I was like, it doesn't surprise me on some level, but it still kind of makes me like uncertain about what to even say.
We were speculating on it. So actually, after she finished Hard Rock, I'm like, she should just go for UTMB at this point. But to me, honestly, so I think Western States to Hard Rock was pretty bonkers in terms of what it was asking of her physiologically. Granted, Courtney is a physiological outlier. She breaks every single rule. It's wild.
We tried
to
speculate
so cool.
on that physiology. And even then, it's like, it seems impossible, right? And I don't even know how this could be feasible. And what are your thoughts on how she's going to, do you have any predictions like about what's going to happen?
Yeah, I think she's going to win.
Okay.
I think she's going to set a course record. I think we've learned time and time again, you don't bet against Courtney, but I do think actually, so I think that UTMB is not as bonkers to me as the Western States Hard Rock double.
Interesting.
Granted, it's the Western States Hard Rock UTMB triple, but there is enough time, I feel like, between Hard Rock and UTMB where she can really recover, get in some solid training. And I feel like these efforts, I mean, I think there is actually the body, especially at Courtney's level and other athletes' level, I think they're like Western States and Hard Rock itself serve as great primers for UTMB. They're great training.
Yes. Yeah. The hard part I have with all this is I think sometimes it's easy to idealize what Courtney goes through and think that she's not pushing that hard because she's
she is. Yeah.
At Western States.
Oh, she was so sick. Yeah.
She was so sick and she was so like beyond the edge, even though she was being delightful to everybody. But if you know what you're looking at, you know that that's an athlete that was wrecked and pushed themselves to the limits.
Oh, her CK, her creatine kinase, must have been through the roof.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so how is she going to come back? And
she has more time.
Yeah.
If she was able to do it from Western States to Hard Rock, I feel like surely she can do it through to UTMB.
Or.
And she's got that momentum.
For sure.
We've been talking about momentum on podcasts and how much sometimes it matters as an athlete. Like, talk about momentum. She's got dump truck energy momentum.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be a turn and a punch bowl just because like, you know, I think it is important to think about physiology.
That's like the opposite of who you are though. You're like literally never the turd in the punch bowl. Well, you're always like the extra fruit punch in the punch bowl. And everyone's like, dude, that is far too sweet.
I'm like the scotch in the punch bowl that someone puts in. Yeah. Okay. The thing that I'm thinking about here are long through hikes, let's say, or multi-day adventures or stage races or something like that. Often what you'll see in athlete physiology is that over the course of the start of these long adventures, their physiology will usually have some regression points. But then after a while, something weird will happen where they'll often improve. We see this in the Tour de France. I've seen it with athletes like John Kelly doing big multi-day type things, people through hiking the Appalachian Trail, things like that. But after they stop, for any reason, often the physiology then crashes. Mm-hmm. I'll even see this in HRV. So like John Kelly or someone, he has a very high HRV. For the first few days after one of his long adventures, we'll see 160, 180 HRV numbers, really, really high. But then all of a sudden it craters down to like 40 and his, you know, readiness score goes to zero essentially. And so the one concern I would have for Courtney now is doing those two things back to back.
Yep.
Will, and then having more time, will the more time actually be a negative when you're stacking up these humongous stresses in multiple windows? Does that hold any water with you?
Okay. It would hold water for any other athlete, but Courtney. Like, I feel like when we have discussions about physiology, we almost need a different term to describe for Courtney because she's totally different. Like, I mean, it's literally, we're playing with different like human behavior and different, like if you look at her past performances, honestly, even if you feed this into an AI model, I bet you they would agree. And we did this.
Yeah.
We asked ChatGPT, we're like, do you think Courtney's going to win UTMB? What did it say?
Well, so it really resisted giving me an answer.
Why? That's curious.
Well, it doesn't like to guess things.
That's true. That's actually interesting about AI, that it doesn't like to guess.
Well, it just doesn't want to be wrong, like, you know, and make itself sound ridiculous, I think. That's how they programmed it, essentially, because it was all saying, like, the usual disclaimers. But then I gave it all the information about what she's done this year, because it's not programmed past 2021. And then what I said is, I don't accept this bullshit. You got to give me a yes or no answer as someone that just guesses.
And it kind of sounds like when you talk to me, you're like, I don't accept this bullshit, Megan.
That's what I do. I talk to the GPT. Like, I'm like, bitch, give me my answer. And it said she will win, but she will not set the course record. So I do want to put, you know, we'll see what that happens. So we'll see with Courtney. I mean, I agree with your point about physiology. I feel like if we put her on the sweat test and fed her sweat through the machine to get whatever her salt levels is, it would just come back with sprinkles
or
something like that. Like some total non sequitur about physiology.
I was going to say it wouldn't come back with anything. But I think the curious thing about Courtney is I don't think she's done any of these. Like when we talked to her on her podcast, I mean, it doesn't even seem like she's had her blood work done.
Yeah.
I would love to do a Courtney deep dive, have her in the lab.
Oh gosh, that would be the coolest thing of all time. Yeah. Maybe at some point we can do it for like charity or something.
Oh, cool.
Like I'd see if Courtney would be willing to just do like a few basic tests that we pay for and see what happens.
That would be so cool.
No, I don't think she will. I think part of her superpowers come from, you know, the mix of intuition and internal expertise. So yeah.
And the sprinkles.
And the sprinkles, of course. Okay. Number two, this is a fascinating point about running. So I saw some graphs recently this week that the 1500 meter time, so essentially mile performances varying from 330 for the fastest men to like 352 now for the fastest women, have improved a ton, especially over the last few years. Meanwhile, 800 meter times have not. They've largely remained the same.
And it's actually kind of an interesting U-shaped curve too, because 100 meter and 200 meter performances have improved a ton. And then it kind of goes down, and at the nadir of the curve is the 800 meters, which hasn't improved a lot. And then all of these aerobic events like 1500 meters, 5K, 10K, marathon, all huge improvements. And it's kind of curious to me. Yeah.
I love the nadir of the curve. I know the word you're referring to. I do not know how it's pronounced.
Oh, neither do I.
But I love that you went for it. We'll see. After the podcast, we'll look up pronunciation.
I know, we always do that after the podcast and we're just like, shoot. But last week, we stumbled on telomeres and it turns out we're both right.
Yeah.
The Merriam-Webster dictionary pronounced telomere, like you said, and then the Nobel laureates say telomere, like I said. So I should probably sat in the side of
it. We had a couple scientists that emailed in and said that you were correct, actually, of course.
Yeah, but the dictionary does pronounce it like you do.
We also had an AI researcher that emailed in and said we had the best conversation about AI he has heard on a podcast, which high five, Megan.
High five. Well,
I'm pretty proud of us.
We are definitely not experts in AI, nor are we experts in pronouncing any words. So it is always helpful when we're right, but we also could be wrong a lot.
You know what I'm imagining? So the nadir of the curve or whatever you said, the Ralph Nader politician, the like Green Party politician. I'm just imagining his face on the end of the curve. But it's fascinating. And I wonder what that is. My guess would be that we're seeing a signal from training theory. So I don't understand the sprints well enough to know why that's improving like it is.
I think spikes probably have a big
role
in that. The like evolution that we've seen in terms of distance running shoes and foam and plates has applied to sprints as well.
Yeah. But why would that not happen in 800? So when they have good spikes too, my guess would be it gets back to the aerobic end of the spectrum that we're talking about. So Jacob Ingebrigtsen, the best miler in the world right now for men, famous for the Norwegian style of training, which is heavily aerobic focused and high volume. My guess is that those types of training approaches, which are dominating now at the international level for US runners, Norwegian runners, Kenyan runners, everything, that those don't work as well for the 800. Like, you know, there's always this talk of, are you a 400, 800 runner, so more of a sprinter 800 runner, or are you a 800, 1500 runner, so more of an aerobically inclined 800 runner?
Or are you a thing moo and you do it all?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yes, yeah. But I think the 800, 1500 runners, they can win races, but they don't necessarily run the insanely fast times that would push this chart that we're seeing to show the more outlier performances. So the 800, 1500 runners are great at finishing from behind fast in good times, but not world records. And so the aerobic end of the spectrum is not heavily represented in the outlier performances at 800 because the events are so short. Does that theory hold up water to you?
Well, I think what actually like puts a lot of merit on that theory is the idea that, so as you're looking at this curve, the performances get stronger. There's like a dose response relationship that as you go up the curve, so as you get to 5K, 10K marathon, the gain that we've had in performances gets higher and higher, which makes a little bit sense too, because the events are longer.
And also the shoes, you know,
the shoes,
if they make you more economical, it probably prevents some of the central fatigue, like the background fatigue processes, from taking hold.
Exactly. But I do think because each of those events has like more and more aerobic contributions, you would expect that if the aerobic contributions were really contributing to the 15, they contribute to the marathon even more. And that's what we're seeing in the data.
Yeah. And what's exciting to me about this is you chart that out. Think about ultras and all of this other, like the topics we talk about a lot on here.
Yeah, think about 100K.
Oh my God.
Like if our curve is going up, like think about where the 100K goes. Plus the idea too, that all of these events, like 1500 to marathon, have been run a ton. Yeah. 100K has not. It's been a much larger sample size. So as we increase that sample size, as we increase the training knowledge, that's going to go up huge.
I'm so excited for the future. And it leads me to a little bit of a conclusion that's only partially related to this, but we have been talking about in coaching. So I might be giving away a little bit of a secret about how we're thinking about things.
I'm a little worried where you're going here.
Yes, which is, I think it's time for athletes to go out more aggressively in long ultras.
Yeah, I agree, actually. Yeah. You know, how do you give that advice to your athletes? I mean, that's a very difficult line to walk though, because you know, you also could be imploding at the end of the race. How do you describe that to athletes?
Find the edge.
Yeah.
And explore it and learn. And what the goal is learning. Yeah.
I tell it, do the same thing to athletes, but also let's practice this.
Yes.
Let's like, you know, before you get into a race like UTMB coming up or any of the UTMB races, let's practice having done this before, so we understand how your physiology responds.
And I think
because I think if someone like Drew almost always, there's certain athletes like Drew, Leah, athletes that we coach that have had these amazing performances from behind, perhaps they go out a little faster for them, but maybe they really benefit from that racing approach.
Do you think Drew should go? So Drew's doing CCC. Should he go out harder in the front?
I think he should go out a little bit harder. I don't think he should be as close to the edge as someone else, because his physiology responds so beautifully at the end of races.
Yeah.
What do you think?
No, I agree. That's what we concluded on our long run where we talked about everything. But it's interesting just because I think there is so much area under the curve still as we're talking about these events. Like, yes, Courtney is pushing the limits of human performance, but for everybody else, basically, there seems to be a lot of space there.
Yeah.
And I think that often when we're tracking these races, our athletes that go out more aggressively, whether they're winners or people that are just trying to finish and, you know, are chasing cutoffs and that sort of thing, they perform better.
Yeah. But I also think it's about asking the athlete what they want to.
Definitely, yeah.
I think some athletes psychologically like really thrive on racing and other sorts of mentalities, like coming from behind or starting out a little bit easier. Or, you know, I've been in races before. Like I can think back to the North Face 50, which was the first 50 mile race I did.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's really important to me to finish this race. I want to fuck around and find out there. Like, and I want to see what my potential is, but I want to make sure I finish this race and put myself in a good position to feel good. And I started out a little slower and I have no regrets for that. So I think it really depends on like what you're looking for in the race.
I love that. But I think the basic thesis is fuck around and find out a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, like not at the first one, like you need to learn these processes, but we are seeing time and time again that there are opportunities at the edge. And if not, if it isn't the right decision for you, you learn a lot more at the edge than you do in your comfort zone.
Well, I think I think when I have conversations with athletes though, it's like, if we're going into this, we need to understand that failure happens at a higher rate.
Definitely,
and I think being okay and accepting that, it's like my side short pee. You're going to pee on your hand. You might pee on your bike, but the third time you might get it. And it might like change your philosophy on how you think about a lot of things.
Do you ever have mistakes with the side short pee anymore? Or is it, you just nail it 100% of the time?
I'm getting closer.
100%. Okay.
Every once in a while at the tail end, I'll like hit my bib shorts or something, but it's a price I'm worth it's worth paying for.
That's inspiring. It's like even Lionel Messi occasionally misses a penalty shot.
Oh, but for sure.
Yeah. That's you. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Do you want to get to science quick hitters actually?
Let's do it. Yeah.
Awesome. So we have a few studies we wanted to talk about here. All came out in the last week and all have interesting like implications, I think, for training, or they're just funny.
And a lot of these parallel what we've talked about. So the side short P actually brings us to this study, which yes. I love. It's called The Effect of Pre-Exercise Hyperhydration on Exercise Performance, Physiological Outcomes, and GI Symptoms, a systematic review.
So this was in Sports Medicine, just came out as we talked about. And the basic conclusion is that the protocols for this vary a ton. But the way you can think about it is generally that you take in more fluid with high levels of electrolytes. So mm-hmm. on one end, you can do it with sodium, which would be something like precision tabs or something like that. On the other end, I was seeing that some of the studies use glycerol.
Yeah,
glycerol?
I was surprised by that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually glycerol is banned by WADA for a period of time because yeah. it increases plasma volume so well because it has plasma expansion properties that is being used as a masking agent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so weird. So, but what they found is when they're looking at this, it's not just people that are doing ultras or marathons that might benefit. They generally saw some improvement in performance. So here's a quote from the study. Pre-exercise hyperhydration may improve exercise capacity during constant work rate exercise due to a reduced heart rate and core temperature stemming from an acute increase in plasma volume.
Which made me really excited because yeah. all of those things are good. But I was also thinking about it too in the context of heart rate drift.
Yeah.
So often on hot days or days at higher altitude, after the first 20 minutes of run, you see a pretty substantial heart rate drift. And that is attenuated by things like hydration. And I imagine the hydration status that you go into before exercising plays a big role in heart rate drift.
Yeah. And it's wild to see how much physiology can actually change. Like, here we're talking about plasma volume, and that's what makes my ears prick up a lot. Mm-hmm,
yep.
We talk about blood volume a ton on the podcast, and the more studies we see, the more we see that blood volume kind of connects everything with performance. And it makes sense because blood is what transports your oxygen, and it's what transports your lactate. It basically transports everything.
It's what makes us live.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Not just training, it's life, too. Yeah.
Megan, all that matters is training. Training is life, right?
Football is life. Training's not life. Football is life.
Danny Rojas. But this principle is really interesting to me. So if thinking about your hydration status outside of the hyperhydration context even influences blood plasma volume, how might it affect long-term plasma volume changes in the mm-hmm. body?
Yes.
So yeah. if we're thinking a little bit more about staying hydrated, how we hydrate throughout the day, will that have implications for this? I don't know. I do love working with Precision though so far because they're at the cutting edge of this. They think so much about how this works and they have tons of case studies with elite athletes, including cycling teams like Lotto Destiny. And so we're still learning a lot, but I think part of the next frontier of fueling and performance is going to come down to how does essentially sodium mixed with hydration to influence these types of processes.
And for me, it's also been stealthy GI training as yeah. well, because as I talked about, I've been trying to get out earlier and earlier to run. I love being there when Leo wakes up in the morning. And so for me, that means like 5:30, 5:45 in the morning runs, which actually isn't too early compared to what I've run before. But if you're trying to get in this amount of hydration
yeah.
plus fuel to power my dump truck energy, it's good GI training, but it's led to me peeing quite a bit on runs.
Yeah.
What do you tell athletes if they have to wake up and they have like a 30-minute turnaround? How do you get it all in? How do you get in the fuel? How do you get in the hydration? Like, it's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think first thing you do right when you wake up, no matter when you wake up, is you get some fluid and you like immediately.
Yeah. Plus I'm trying to get caffeine sources in me too. Yeah. So it's like, I'm stacking all this stuff that's hanging out in my stomach as I go out for a run.
So this brings up something that I had an epiphany about on the run. So yes, we're talking about Precision a lot here, but yesterday on the run, I had LMNT.
Yes.
Which is, essentially they make very, very, very salty drink additives. And I had something called chocolate salt. And it absolutely mimicked the Nesquik I put in my tea, but it seemed like it was more of a performance-oriented thing. So
it also seemed like it was more of a David Roach-related thing because we went biking together
yeah.
and we did – actually, it was really fun. We did some threshold work on the bike and we got
– Megan got a CR, so a Queen of the Mountain, to Jamestown, Colorado and back on the world-famous left-hand canyon road. You're a freaking superstar, Megan. You've been dealing a little bit with a little niggle here, which sucks, but you're feeling better. And in the process, you've just biked a few times and you're setting all-time bike records over top world professionals. You're superhuman.
Oh, thank you. Well, QOMs in Boulder are very hard to come by on the bike, also because they're done in like 90-person group rides.
Yeah.
And so it made me feel a little less guilty for holding your wheel the entire time. But so anyways, after we did this work, you tried to feed me this warm chocolate salt drink, and it was atrocious. I'm like, what are you doing? Get this out of my face.
That was the most chivalrous thing I've ever done, because I wanted this stuff all over me. I wanted to like pour it down my chest. You know, like in Ricky Martin's music video way back in the day, they poured like candle wax on each other. That's what I wanted to do with this. It was very sensual for me that I was giving this to you. And you turned it down. That was pretty demoralizing for me.
Well, I turned it down, but I had to turn it down 15 times because you weren't taking no for an answer.
No.
It was like you were communicating with ChatGPT and you're like, here's your chocolate drink, bitch. And I was like, I do not want that. I do not want that. I had to tell you that like 15 times.
Okay. Chocolate consent is sexy. I get it. But the whole concept here, I think, is important. And so what I would say to the what you do in the morning is fluid with a little bit of sodium right when you wake up.
Yep.
And then get at least 100 grams or, you know, as close to 100 grams of carbs in as you can in the context of your morning meal. And that's all you need. So, you know, the fluid can be in the context of, you know, coffee or tea or whatever. And the carbs can be anything from chocolate to a bar to a gel or anything. And occasionally you can even go fasted. But I do think the hydration element is something you cannot circumvent, you know. In the fasting, you need to be careful with, usually on just hour or shorter runs.
Well, my jam recently has been gummies. So I wake up and I get very excited to eat my gummies. And then I have some liquid hydration, whether that's Precision or sometimes I do Goo Roctane drink, and I have a little bit of caffeine with that. So then I can like lessen my tea. So it's been a good combination.
You have pot gummies? You would love those runs though.
Oh, that would be really fun.
It would be really fun.
No, I haven't had an edible in many, many, many years, which is kind of sad.
Why don't you start trying it? The scratch gummies are the gateway drug to 20 milligrams THC right when you wake up.
Okay, I would not be able to get out the door.
But the sunrise would be fucking delightful. It would
be so beautiful.
And your Strava title, I'm sure, would be amazing. It would be great. So as you think about this concept, think a little bit about the sodium content in your general drinks. So like, I think sometimes people drink a ton of water. Like I'll hear about people going around with a gallon of water throughout the day. That's probably the opposite of this type of protocol. So Precision has a lot of great resources on that. If you just are drinking a ton of water or whatever, you're probably going to actually just flush your system and cause the, you know, diuretic hormones.
And feel kind of shitty.
Yeah. Go crazy. There are some complications here. It could be different in real world settings, could cause GI distress for some people. Female athletes are not studied enough, but be aware of this frontier of knowledge. We'll talk about it a little bit more in a specific way later on, because I think the science is starting to get undeniable.
And my hydration strategy is just walk around with a big ass jug and a straw. And I don't know, for whatever reason, it helps me hydrate.
You do like your jugs.
I do. Yeah.
All about the jugs in this house.
Yes.
Jugs. Okay. Next one is from the Journal of Physiology. Just came out. It's called Resistance Training Diminishes Mitochondrial Adaptations to Subsequent Endurance Training in Healthy Untrained Men. This study is weird as shit. We don't know what to make of it, but we do think that it is some sort of signal that we need to pay attention to.
And I think the signal is interesting because it was actually the opposite direction of their hypothesis.
Yeah.
And I always think it's interesting when you look at scientific studies and they hypothesize one thing, which is usually based off of a body of literature or some intuitive knowledge. And usually they go through and explain that. And then their study winds up being different.
Yeah.
And this is a case of that. And I think it's actually an area where we need a lot more research. So for the study, what they did was they had two groups. So they had one group that was doing resistance training for 7 weeks. And in addition to that resistance training, they were doing 7 weeks of endurance training.
After the resistance training.
And then they had another group that was doing just endurance training for 7 weeks.
Yeah. And the weirdest results came out of this. So first, the levels of mitochondrial complexes 1 to 4 in the endurance training only group increased by 32 to 66%. That makes sense. Healthy, untrained men, you increase the mitochondrial complexes.
And mitochondria, we should actually do a whole like segment on mitochondria because the function is really vast in terms of endurance performance. So great for oxidative metabolism, great for lactate shuttling, great for a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And we should do a deep dive on mitochondria.
You currently have a backward hat on.
See, oh, I do.
You're bringing the backward hat mitochondria energy.
The backward hat energy. You know, I just love backwards hats and hoop earrings. It's been like my fashion jam recently.
Okay. The people are dying to hear about the rest of the study, but first, hoop earrings. You're wearing big hoops right now, not just little hoops.
Okay, they're pretty small hoops.
They're inch hoops.
Okay, I consider big hoops to be something you could like stick your fist through.
Okay.
This is like, I can't stick my finger through these.
You can stick a lot of things through those hoops is all we're saying. So where does that come from?
It's just the vibe I like. I don't know. I feel like my 14-year-old self, and I feel empowered in that.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's a good lesson to everybody. Just do your equivalent of hoop earrings in dump truck energy, and you're going to be crushing life.
You're going to be crushing mitochondria.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, but what the fascinating finding here is the people that did resistance training and then endurance training increased just 1 to 11%. So that's in relation to 32 to 66% for just endurance training. Next, mixed fiber relative mitochondrial content increased by 15% in the endurance group and decreased by 13% in the other group. Wild shit right there.
And when you think about that, that means that prior resistance, so doing resistance training prior to endurance training, actually led to impaired mitochondrial adaptation in that group, which is interesting. Weird, yeah. Well, a lot of the, and I think they didn't necessarily hypothesize this, they thought the opposite was going to be true, because there's a large body of research that shows that resistance training combined with endurance training has beneficial things on a whole host of physiology.
Yeah.
And it hasn't really been looked at as much in the mitochondria. And so they were a little confused by this.
Yeah. And so I don't know exactly what to make of this. I do think it's a time to take a step back and think that a lot of the studies on things like resistance training, strength work, are not necessarily well constructed to understand how to do it yourself.
Well, I don't think they're well constructed in terms of high level endurance athletes that aren't genetically gifted to be super slow twitch athletes.
And high level endurance adaptations in general.
Yeah.
So we have seen through coaching that with our strength work, we want to de-emphasize it, but make it consistent.
Yes. I love this. We're actually using a scientific study just to dive into our anecdotal experiences.
But the point is, the reason we have those anecdotal experiences is very strong team-wide evidence, including on both of us, that if we do the type of strength work that's sometimes modeled in some studies, our endurance performances worsen, even as maybe our running economy would improve if we were being measured in a lab. What are we seeing? Perhaps we're seeing something similar to this, that there is some mitochondrial crosstalk that we need to understand. That being said, I do think the only real conclusion of the study is just the study protocol. Be careful of doing resistance training and then stopping resistance training.
Agreed, actually.
Which is what the authors theorized, is that maybe part of this is just detraining from the resistance training because they stopped doing it during the endurance window. So you should probably keep doing it if you do it. But what we'd say is make sure that the resistance training you're doing is endurance focused. So our swap, ultra legs, mountain legs, stuff like that, is basically probably trying to get at the mitochondria. Like, that's our goal, even as we didn't really realize it till we saw the study. Or the study could just be kind of a drop in a larger bucket that doesn't mean everything that we're thinking it does, or maybe it wouldn't be repeated by other studies.
Well, I would love to see follow-up studies that are looking at this exact point and then also have more groups and levels, because it's like, you know, we just have one situation here where they did resistance training and then they stopped and they did endurance training. And I would love to see different combinations. Like what
resistance
happens
throughout.
Exactly. What happens if you're doing resistance training in tandem to endurance training? So I have a lot of questions here, but I do like it because it's a convenient point to talk about our anecdotal experience of strength training.
Yeah. Minimal dose resistance training. Mm-hmm, that exactly, is how to approach it for endurance athletes. And it's okay if you disagree. We're not saying that this is the only way, but we're saying that pay attention to your own physiological responses, or for our coaches out there that are listening, how your athletes respond.
And when we say physiological responses, that's a wide range of things, even things like cramping. Like cramping in weird areas, and athletes that are doing very specific strength training might be a signal there that you want to dive into. Or having challenged fatigue resistance, or feeling like you're producing more CK than other runners. And that could be in the form of like really struggling post-race or GI issues. So like, look at a host of physiological considerations.
And the hard part is there are studies that seem to indicate that durability in cyclists might be improved by some types of heavier strength training. So there's counter studies to this too.
Yes.
But since mitochondria are the most important thing for performance, you know, as we talk about things like blood volume and all of that, essentially it's all getting fed through mitochondrion cells as we think about like how energy gets produced. So you just need to be aware that there are weird physiology processes going on that we probably will never fully understand. So anecdote ends up being extremely important. But just compile as many anecdotes as you can and then call it data.
I really like the phrase anecdata.
Yeah.
That's like my favorite phrase. We probably use that a lot on here on the podcast.
Yeah. But I think it's, you know, the coolest thing we have is this humongous body of this information.
Yes.
That we're not publishing information data on, but we're trying to give everyone examples of here on the pod.
Well, we provide anecdata and a lot of caveats.
Yes. Okay. Final study for the quick hitter is from Sports Medicine called Metabolic Adaptations to Morning versus Afternoon Training, a system systematic review and meta-analysis.
And I love, so we have like a brief outline here on the podcast, and really all you have written on here is dumb fucking study. Not because of the idea, the study is actually great.
The study's great.
The study is amazing. But we just really like morning exercise, and this did not confirm our bias.
So quick quote from the study, just so we can give ourselves a hard time. Morning training does not show superior effects to afternoon exercise in any of the analyzed outcomes. However, afternoon training is more effective at reducing circulating triglyceride levels and perhaps at reducing fasting blood glucose than morning training.
Okay, but to be clear, what they were looking at was a lot of lifestyle-related variables. And when I say lifestyle-related variables, I mean variables that are really key to intrinsic health, things like fasting blood glucose and triglyceride levels. But I feel like for athletes that are exercising at a high level, we often don't have to worry about these as much. So getting in consistent morning exercise to me is more important than thinking about things like fasting blood glucose levels. But I think this actually parallels a lot of the research in like the lifestyle medicine field and in the longevity field that shows that like walking for 20 minutes after dinner can be amazing for fasting blood glucose levels and metabolic parameters and things like that.
Yeah. This study, because the thing is we're the huge fans of morning training, and I feel like this study is frustrating just because I'm like, I want this to, you know, go with my hypothesis.
Well, I feel like if you ran in the morning
and
walked for 15 minutes after dinner, you would achieve the same thing.
Okay. Yeah. And I think more to the point, like,
More to the point, like fasting blood glucose for high level athletes really doesn't matter that much. Often athletes actually that are at high level have higher fasting blood glucose because you need to have glycogen on board.
Yeah. And that's actually a good lesson for when you get blood work done. If you have relatively high glucose and you're a healthy athlete and everything but that, usually those numbers are normal to have them elevated. Mm-hmm. And doctors don't understand that for some athletes. Like some doctors don't understand that. So don't worry too much about that number. Definitely work with your doctor, trust them, but also understand that slightly elevated glucose numbers, very similar to how slightly elevated CK numbers, all of this stuff is relatively normal in athletes.
Yeah, it's super interesting. There's so many different, like, actually, sometimes even elevated triglycerides can be indicative of REDS in some athletes.
Wow, yeah.
And it's pretty wild to think about how, like, you know, we have, like, sometimes blood biomarkers tell stories that we're not expecting to see.
Hypercholesterolemia or something like that is often seen in athletes that are coming back from eating disorders or having disorders where cholesterol is quite high. Mm-hmm. And doctors will then put them on some sort of nutritional intervention to reduce cholesterol. And I'm like, actually, they need the opposite. They need to have as many burgers as humanly possible or whatever the vegetarian equivalent is to help deal with this. So if you actually are dealing with something like that, like REDS or whatever, and you have high cholesterol levels, especially for young women out there, be very aware that you might be seeing the opposite of what your doctor thinks.
And it's like the slide that I had in my dissertation. It was just a slide of a Ben and Jerry's carton, and it said population health for a specific population, which is often the population that we're talking to.
Yeah.
Ben and Jerry's might be the best thing for population health.
Getting Ben and Jerry's into dissertations.
Yes.
Since 2010. That is a swap right there. Okay, quick recap of the Tour de France Femmes, because we've been talking about the Tour de France every week. Tour de France Femmes just finished up yesterday. Was an awesome race. It was so fun to follow. If you didn't, go back and watch the YouTube recaps. It is a blast.
Oh, it's been such a joy, because I feel like I always have this withdrawal period after Tour de France, and now I get the Tour de France Femmes, and honestly, I think it might even be better.
I agree.
So the Tour de France always has these short video recaps, and for the men's, it was like very jarring. Like, they were segmenting things. It wasn't really making sense. In the Femmes, it was like sweet, sweet perfection.
There was such good narrative. I'm like, whoever the intern was that was doing the videos rocked it. They might be a podcast listener, so yeah, I would be a huge fan if they reached out.
But can we talk about Kasia Niemiadama for a second?
Okay. So she finished third in the final of the race by just a couple tenths of a second, but podium's podium.
Oh, and she was happy. She got the polka dot jersey too, which means that she was the queen of the mountains, which to me is the coolest jersey. Plus, I love polka dots. I think it looks like the most fly jersey. I'm obsessed with her.
Yes.
So I'm also obsessed with Tadej Pogačar. And actually, someone on our podcast called us out because apparently we were Team Jonas last year, and I kind of forgot about that.
Yeah.
We jumped ship.
We contain multitudes, is what I told this listener.
Yeah.
You know, we've just learned to love Tadej so much that we hate all of his competitors as you're...
Okay, I don't hate Jonas.
I hate Jonas.
You hate Jonas. We were going to name Leo Jonas. Can you imagine?
Well, I'm glad we didn't, because we would have had to put him in the dumpster. Because Tadej is my king. But Kasia is the queen. My favorite thing about her is she has this really attacking riding style. And she's also really well known for having her jersey half unzipped. So she unzips it down all the way, which I imagine is just for temperature, but it's almost become a calling card.
No, I feel like it's her hoop earrings. It's the kind of swag. Because if you think about zipping down your jersey, that's like not air resistant. That's terrible for airflow dynamics.
But now, every time we're out riding, one of us will just unzip our jersey halfway and then attack the other person and yell, "Gasha!" as loud as we can. And when you attacked me yesterday at the end of an interval to get another segment that you got, you almost looked exactly like her on the bike. And it was one of the coolest moments I ever had.
It was such a compliment. After you came, after you came up and caught back, you're like, "You look like Kasia out there." And I was like, "Oh my God." I look like 1/10 of Kasia. She looks like a total boss. I still look a little bit like a noob on a bike.
No, you do not look a noob at all, but she does have infinite watts. And I really want to be her friend because she also is dating Taylor Finney,
who's
a famous former pro men cyclist. And I want to have dinner with them here in Boulder.
Oh, that would be so fun. But I think my big takeaway from the Tour de France, both the Tour de France and the Tour de France Femmes, is like, I just love the riders that have some duende out there and that are truly themselves. And Tade was that way and Kashi was that way. And I don't know, it's so cool to me. And I don't know, they ride with so much joy and spunk. And I'm like, I want to embody that in all of life.
And at the end of these races, they often give the most combative rider award.
Yes.
There might be a weird translation there, but essentially what it means is most aggressive rider. And that is the award I would always try to win. I'd be the very last place finisher, but everyone would be like, "That guy's competitive as fuck. You know? He does a lot of dumb shit. I like that."
As how I played ball sports and it wasn't always rewarded. I was like the most combative player in basketball and fat out of everything.
Okay, so the most interesting part of the Tour de France Femmes came on the Queen stage, which is what they call the stage for both men and women that has the most elevation gain and is the hardest stage of the race. Annemiek van Vleuten is the ultimate superstar of women's cycling over the last decade.
And this is the last year before she retires. So she's 41. This was her last Tour de France Femmes. And everyone was like, she's just totally dominated.
Yeah.
And it was the expectation that she was going to run away with it on the stage.
And her big competitor right now is Demi Vollering. And so those three, Kasia, Nio Adama, Annemiek van Vleuten, and Demi Vollering all got away on the cold ass bend. So it's a tough, long climb.
We need like a Game of Thrones tree to distinguish all of these different characters and how they're taking on each other.
And they're such badasses and they crested the climb together. And as they descend, the two favorites, I would say, Annemiek van Vleuten and Demi Vollering, started playing a game of cat and mouse where Demi refused to do a pull. And so Annemiek was like, "No, I'm not going to pull you because you're so good too." Annemiek slams on the brakes to the point you can even hear it on the broadcast, the like squeak of disc brakes. And they just went back. Well, Kasia just rode off ahead. And they were playing this ultimate game of chess out there where Demi refused to take a single pedal stroke, as did Annemiek. And then they got caught by the group behind them. And to me, it was like, this is why cycling is awesome, because it is a mental game in addition to being a game of watts and physiology.
Well, it reminds me a lot of tennis. And them just like taking rips at each other. And how like, I feel like the conversations that you have in your head, whether it's tennis or whether it's in cycling, and I'm going to talk about Andre Agassi one more time. He's like Courtney.
Yeah.
We're like almost done his biography. And I feel like there's so many situations in which I'm like, Andre. But he talks about the idea that in tennis, you are alone on the court and you are having these conversations with yourself, often out loud, and you're not allowed to talk to anyone else.
Yeah.
And so there's so much conversation between you and yourself. And I love that because I think it's fascinating. Like, what do you say to yourself, whether you're Demi Vollering or Annemiek van Vleuten or Andre Agassi, and you're having this conversation to yourself and how much that matters?
Yeah. And the different part about cycling, though, is you do have like team directors in your ear.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So my guess is they were also getting messages about what they should do.
Be like, don't pull.
Meanwhile,
yeah,
Kasia was just riding off ahead.
Which I thought was really badass.
It was so badass. And what ended up happening there is Annemiek faltered for the first time in many years. And Demi Vollering on the next climb, the Col du Tourmalet, which they had a mountaintop summit, passed Kasia Nio Adama and puts her stamp on the Tour de France Femme. Establishes herself as the best rider in the world right now. She's had a string of dominance that is truly epic, whereas Annemiek van Vleuten kind of had her swan song, probably, though maybe she'll win the World Champs or some other event coming
up. I'm sure she will, yeah.
But it's a reminder, too, of the aging process, you know?
Oh, it's hard.
So what she did is she went, you know, when she slowed down with Demi Vollering, she was saying, "This is what I can do. I know what I can do." Much like Addie when she tries to jump on a really high ledge approaching 11, you know, our dog. And sometimes Addie now will try to hit that eye edge and will just stop and then fall backwards. And that's what happened to Annemiek van Vleuten. She was able to finish fourth overall in the race, but it's just not what she used to be able to do just a little bit ago. And it's simultaneously like really cool to reflect on that journey and also really hard sometimes to think about the realities of aging and that kind of slow decline that all of us face, even as we try to manage it.
Well, I feel like how an athlete deals with aging shows a level of character that I feel like is really instructive. It actually brings me to the U.S. women's national team right now playing in the World Cup.
Yeah.
Megan Rapinoe, starter, major, incredible athlete.
Yeah.
She is on the bench right now and coming in as a sub. And she has handled that beautifully in a way that I feel like is so instructive for her level of character and who she is as a leader. And I wish I could go back to myself who sat on the bench a little bit my junior year of field hockey, and I handled it so poorly. I was a shithead.
Yeah.
And I look back on that and I'm like, Megan, that was not good character. And I feel like the process of aging, the process of sitting on the bench, the process of like going through these trials is about character.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's about recognizing it in the moment and being like, this is when I step up. And I'm sure Megan Rapinoe has done that. I'm sure Annemiek van Vleuten has. And I look to that and I'm like, damn, that's character.
Athletics is an exploration of character.
Yeah, exactly.
That's beautiful.
And I think reflecting on that as you're going through that, because it's like when you're sitting on the bench, I'm sure Megan Rapinoe actually sitting on the bench is like, fuck, put me in. But she has stifled that and her leadership and her character has come out.
I love it. So yeah, think about how you're, you know, projecting your own character onto the activities you do every day.
Yeah. But I also feel like that's how you reflect on yourself.
Yeah.
Like I look back to myself as a junior in college, sitting on the bench for the first time, literally in my career. And I was such a shithead and I have so many regrets about that.
But you weren't a shithead to anybody else. You're just kind of unhappy inside your own head, right?
But I mean, I think by nature of that, I wasn't a leader that I should have been and could have been.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it's a really interesting question. Do you have like, do you think about that a lot? Do you have regrets about that?
I don't really think about it a lot. I think about it now. But every once in a while in the middle of the night, I do have a dream and I'm like, damn, I was a piece of shit.
You just put on those hoop earrings, zip down your jersey and attack.
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to get on to some Patreon questions?
Oh, I love it. Let's do it.
Okay. This is so fun. Every single week, we do rapid fire questions, usually 8 to 10 nowadays, on a Patreon bonus episode. And we're doing Science Corner posts and we're doing like newsletters on there. So sign up for the $10 tier if you can, because that is awesome. Patreon.com/swap, S-W-A-P.
We've been committed to the rapid fire bit. Every time we get on and record, we're like, oh, we just want to take random tangents. But you know what? We stay on task
we
on
do.
Patreon.
Kind of. And as a little bit of a tease, we're having our merch come out. And we're thinking that we're going to open it up to the $10 tier on Patreon, which are going to be these amazing jerseys and hats that are really cool. You're going to love them. They're very sleek. You can wear them if you're trying to win a race like Western States in terms of they aren't ridiculous. But then you'll also get a lot of fun questions about them. And yes, huzzah, sneaked in somewhere on there. So we're going to open it up to our team, but then also the $10 tier on Patreon.
I'm really excited about these designs. And we have a crop top.
Yeah.
In full Kasha Niyodama swag. We have a swap crop top and I'm so excited for it.
I don't feel those crop tops.
I had to talk you into it.
No, it's my body positivity does ends for me. Like my own personal body positivity ends at crop tops.
Well, my point was like, this is the conversation that we have with female athletes all the time is choose to run in the sports bra. If it's hot out, run
and
in the
you,
sports
and
bra
like it,
and you like it and it uplifts you, do that. And I that's the message that I hope we have with these crop tops. And that's why I wanted to do it.
I love it. Yeah.
Because Kasha Niyodama would like have that swag.
I love it. I mean, I deeply love that. And when I make that joke, the reason that like I think that for myself gets back to my own body image concerns, right?
But you're running 1-inch purple shorts.
I will. Yeah, that's true. That's a contradiction. But it isn't though, because like for me, doing things like wearing ridiculous clothing is partially facing the body image concerns. Like I have had to just fully come to terms with that. So maybe I should be wearing the crop top.
Well, here's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a few crop tops.
Uh-huh.
Your laundry is going to be short.
Uh-huh.
You're totally going to be wearing a crop top on your next Saturday date with Drew.
Oh my God. The crop top and the smash and bash 1-inch shorts.
It's going to look so good.
It's going to be so good. Okay. So patreon.com/swap, S-W-A-P. Sign up now so you get that when it comes out in the next week or two. So here's a question from the listener. Greetings to the most positive team in podcasting. I'm not sure this question is a great answer, but you seemed like the best place to start. I know there's been a ton of great publications recently concerning underfueling, REDS, overtraining, including some of your articles, but everything I've read mainly is describing pathophysiology, risks, and incidents with a blanket recommendation to see a specialist team if you think you may be at risk. While I agree with all I've seen published, there's a paucity of these specialists available, especially in the case of limited ability to pay for extra medical care. Are there any types of recommendations you've seen for initial steps if you're concerned, but not certain, about diagnoses for these types of things in terms of scaling back activity, workup with primary care, expectations for time course? There may not be, but it's definitely been more difficult to find on my end. Thanks for all of your work in this field.
This is an outstanding question.
Isn't it? Yeah.
I love this. And also because I am guilty in so many of the articles I've written and even like the publications, that's like work with a multidisciplinary team is a statement that I have in so many things. But you know what? Multidisciplinary team is really freaking expensive.
Yeah.
It's also in some areas too, you might not have access to that. And so this is an amazing question about like, what do I do in that case?
And it's difficult too, because I say that all the time too. I'm like, basically whenever I get a question about food, weight, things like this, outside of saying the kind of general blanket recommendations we type of try to give on here, like work with a specialist.
Work with, for me, it's so often I say a registered dietitian.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or something.
A great
like
place
that.
To start. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, the problem with that becomes like that type of recommendation doesn't work for a lot of people, like mm-hmm. in terms of their abilities or even availability or quality of RD they're able to contact locally.
Actually, I was just going to say that is like so many professionals, RDs, doctors, mental health professionals, all have a spectrum of experience. And some of that is limited to none in terms of these topics, and also have a spectrum of expertise and abilities too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's good doctors out there and there's bad doctors out there. And same goes for every single field, good coaches, good teachers, bad teachers, and a whole spectrum in between.
Yeah. And I think that gets back to the ideal starting point for this type of thing. This type of question actually is emblematic of the starting point, which is that you need a full and honest conversation about your thoughts around food.
Yes.
Not just conducted in your own head, conducted with someone that you trust. It can be family, it can be friends, it can be coach. It ideally would be an expert in this field. But usually reds and types of things you're talking about can be seen in restrictive tendencies that usually it's not totally unknown to the questioner. Mm-hmm. Like this listener, by asking this question, is probably answering part of their question at the start.
That exactly.
This
I love that.
Is likely an issue for them that they need to consider in a holistic but also very targeted sort of way.
And I think if this is likely an issue for you, exceed with a lot of caution.
Yeah.
And I think that's where like, don't overdo it in training. Really think about dialing back intensity, keeping things easy for a period of time as you go through this process. Because I think that by itself, if you start to feel a lot better, as you add more food, as you add more carbs, as you start to dial back training, that is a really helpful instructive part.
Yeah.
And we've seen like, you know, if this is not REDS, that by itself is actually probably even helpful too.
Yeah. And we've seen with athletes that often they'll be like, do I need to totally shut down training? I'm like, no, as long as you're fueling. The problem is sometimes athletes are so deep in it that they need to stop training to actually rebound their fueling to appropriate levels.
And to rebound, I feel like sometimes when you do that too, it also resets your mental relationship
definitely,
with exercise, which I think is just as important. But I would say that's actually few and far between.
Yeah.
Most athletes are able to keep training to some level. And in fact, that's probably healthy because you want to like reestablish that relationship in a productive and meaningful way.
Yeah. And you know, if you view exercise as like part of the problem, then exercise being framed as a problem is not the actual issue here. Exercise
yes, yeah.
is rarely the problem unless someone has an over-exercising disorder, which sometimes goes in hand in hand with this. But some exercise, being healthy and active, is a good thing. So yes, you probably don't want to go and do a 2-hour stationary bike for no reason. But if you're going out on your 8-mile easy run that you always do, that's totally healthy. Just make sure it's easy and keep it chill as your body recovers this from a training perspective.
Well, I feel like as you're talking about food and restrictive tendencies, I think for me, a big red flag with the relationship to exercise, which is also a component of REDS too, is there a compulsion with that?
Yeah.
Like if you have to take a rest day, are you okay with that? I think that's a great question to ask yourself.
Yeah.
Are you exercising for joy and movement some of the time? Doesn't have to be all of the time. Or does it feels like there's this compulsion to get out the door? So I think ask yourself those questions. Like what happens if I can't train today? Like how does that make my body feel? Do I have restrictive tendencies around food? And then are you willing to experiment and try new things? And I think often the answer to that too is indicative of this question.
Yeah. So like as they're answering, are you willing to try new things?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, sometimes that is the hardest point because athletes might start to want to approach this. But unless you're willing to go in with both feet and make the commitment, it's not going to work.
Yes, exactly.
It's like addiction treatment. Mm-hmm. Like no one goes into AA and has it be successful unless they want to be clean,
mm-hmm.
right? No one will think themselves out of this box and act themselves out of this box unless they want to be healthy. And that gets to where this is largely a psychological problem with like to work with a therapist or a psychological framework mm-hmm. to think about with a therapist. And then the health framework is kind of like, yes, calories matter and things like that, but then also get a blood work panel right away. And ideally a DEXA scan for bone density, those might be too expensive or have difficulty ordering, but a blood work panel will often show you a lot of your mm-hmm. concerns too. So that's a good place to think about it.
I love that. Yeah.
And then finally, try to increase intake if you're worried about this. Like if there is hang up here, this is where you have to work with a professional. You cannot do this on your own for some athletes, but for a lot of athletes, it starts with those daily decisions and just making one more decision and one more decision and trying to understand that this is your pathway to your ultimate strongest self, and your strongest self will be your fastest and happiest self.
And I think be willing to talk about that too with friends, families, teammates.
Yeah. Us email. Like,
yes,
this
exactly.
Is great.
Yeah.
Not because we're going to help necessarily, but because by writing this email, you're on the path.
Well, it's a path that starts the process of accountability, which yeah. I think is so important in these situations. Yeah.
And a little aside here is that a 2023 study just came out in the International Journal of Sports Science and Coaching on the role of coaches in this mm-hmm. process.
Yeah.
But I think it does point out that coaches are obviously not experts here. We are. I'm not an expert. Megan is. But the idea is that coaches should be educated on Reds, and that they should embrace working in this multidisciplinary way rather than just sidelining themselves mm-hmm. fully in it. And I find myself wanting to sometimes sideline myself because I'm like, okay, I'm not an expert, but and also, this is a serious issue. If I say the wrong thing, will I be contributing to the problem? And I think it's okay if your friends are going through this. It's not just coaches. Get into the arena. It's yes, okay yeah. to be the bad guy.
Well, it's better to say the wrong thing with love
yeah.
and good intent and trying to help someone than it is to hold back and wait and try to just like blanketly refer to an expert. That's my take on it.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
So do you have anything else on this general topic that like resonates with you either from research, personal experience, coaching, anything like that?
I just think that in the case of Reds, it is a long recovery. Yeah. And I think so often athletes go in and they're like, we're type A athletes. Like, yeah. I want this fixed in 2 weeks. And in reality, this can be a months to years process. And like, it's an ultra. And I think the more that you embrace that and accept that, like it's an ultra that gets better as the journey goes on, but it truly is a journey.
And it's so worth it. It's
yeah,
so worth it.
Yeah.
If you're out there and you're dealing with anything around these issues, it doesn't have to just be Reds. It can also be things like binge eating, or true eating disorder behavior, or, you know, the reverse. There's such an amazing future ahead. Just like we've talked mm-hmm. about with love recently, that love also gives us the biggest fights we've ever had, but it's the most meaningful thing in our lives. Similarly, working through this process will be the most meaningful thing in your life, but you do have to accept that sometimes it's going to feel like a little bit of a fight.
Yeah, and a little bit of a setback at time that's going to lead to a forward trajectory. And I actually think this brings us to an amazing question. I think this yeah. feeds into a great question on injuries. And how do you think about that period of time of injury and what you can do to kind of change your mentality and your outlook? So this is the question. I've been struggling in the last month with a knee injury that led to changing my running pattern that led to a stress fracture of the foot.
Oof.
I have passed the stage of denial, but I can't help feeling a bit down from that news. It came in a moment when I could feel felt I could do great things. I was super motivated to take on a coach, get out of my comfort zone, and see what I could do on the trails. I had many super fun projects in the upcoming months. I know that injuries are not always logical, but I can't help to feel like it is not 100% fair, even though it is not a rational thought. Mm. And I know it'll eventually get better, but in the day-to-day, I find it super duper tough to stay positive right now. So I was wondering, do you have any motivational thoughts, advice, or strategies when the body just does not want to go on with the plan? What have you found that has worked or helped with either you or the athletes you coach? And thank you again for your great contribution to the trail running community.
Okay, amazing reading and amazing question. And let's just reverse it on you. Right now, you're dealing with a little bit of something. Are you comfortable talking about that?
Yeah, I have a small touch of back pain, but it's a little scary because,
yeah.
So 2 years ago, I had sacroiliitis, which is from the autoimmune stuff
and
I had.
And it's what led to the initial autoimmune diagnosis, where
yes,
they're like, this
yeah.
is the autoimmune process. And then started the whole journey we've been on.
Yeah, and it came back a little bit. I can feel it in my back. It's a weird type of pain, actually.
Yeah.
It's like not a classic running injury type of pain, which is why I have a feeling it's sick. I found out it was sacroiliitis last time from an MRI, but I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure. But no, I mean, I think it's really hard, especially when you've had a history of injuries.
Definitely.
Because it's almost like you're playing this game of like, oh shit, this could be a long time.
Yeah.
And trying to stay grounded in the present moment without letting that spiral.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you're going through the thick of it and it's so hard. And like to this listener, I mean, injuries happen. It's part of being an athlete. And that's the first part that you've got to accept. Like, yes, you could have a condition like Megan does, or you could have nothing like that and get a stress fracture. And it's just part of what you do. So you just kind of have to accept that you're going to have these types of parts of your life. And it's good to go through the stages of grief, starting with denial, ending with acceptance. But it's just who you are, you know? Steph Curry twists his ankle all the time and has ankle issues, and he's doing everything he can to be healthy. Every single athlete out there, I think sometimes runners are like, why do I get injured? It's some defect with me. And it's like, actually, no, it's just because you're a fucking athlete. No one's getting injured on the couch, which is what most people do with their lives.
And I think the challenging part about being injured is that it hurts.
Yeah.
And like, I know for me, like my back has hurt. Like I wake up in the middle of the night at 2 a.m. and I'm like, oh, what's going on? And I think because of the background pain, sometimes it leads our brain to want to think about it all the time. And for me, I've set-
To
poke at it and be like, how does it feel to test it? Like to jog around the kitchen and be is it feeling normal right now?
Yeah.
How does it feel? And I think for me, I have to set like statute of limitations as to when I think about my injury and when I process it. And for me, shutting off the brain and being like, right now when I'm working at my desk is not a time I'm going to think about this.
Yeah.
I can think about it tomorrow morning when I make the decision about whether I'm going to run or bike. And that process for me has been really helpful.
Yeah. And it gets back to the idea of try to have good days.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
You can have a good day without running, without athletics, without any of this stuff.
Actually, some of my best days have been on days that I haven't run. And I look back, I've had periods of time where I haven't done anything for many months, you know, especially with my heart. And I look back at that time and I'm like, that was really special.
Yeah. I mean, you grew so much in those times.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes waking up, I was like, I can't exercise today. This is not fun. But I look back on that collective period of time and I learned so much about myself. And it was actually like some of the times that we had together, like the special moments were really cool.
Yeah. There was also a lot of tears, you know,
yes.
But even on a day you cry, doesn't mean it can't be a great day or, you know, and that's the challenge of injury is use this time to try to fully express yourself in the world without running, defining who you are in that moment. And you're still a runner in that time. Like even when you're resting for 8 weeks or 12 weeks, or in some cases like Megan, many, many months worried you're never going to run again. You're still a fucking runner. Like that's because runners get injured. Runners burn out. Runners take time off. And learning to express yourself in that context without it defining you, that just gives you extra to call on in the future and makes you a better person, not just on the trails, but like in life.
And you still be a part of the community.
Yeah.
Like every part of me, when I'm not in the process of actively running myself, I want to like shove the people. Like there's like an intrinsic deep part of my brain that like, as I'm driving, like wants to shove the people off the road who are running and be like, you don't deserve this. But I've learned to like lean in and be like, you're doing an amazing job. Keep going. Yeah. And it's actually because I've had that practice enough, it's actually truly stuck to the point that I love following running when I'm injured. Like it hasn't changed my relationship with coaching or any of those things, but it's taken active work.
You know what that reminds you of?
Together. Yeah.
Okay. So when we were doing Leo's crib the other day, we
had to lower it. Yes. Yeah.
Because dude is fucking motoring now.
Oh yeah. He's like trying to like hurdle his crib at 9 months. Like, what are you doing?
We were staring at the little monitor, which it looks like a horror movie in black and white. And all of a sudden he sits up, stands up, grabbing the edge of the crib and's like, I'm going to jump. Okay, we need to lower that immediately. And so we did. But in the process, I dropped the entire crib frame on my big toe. And it was painful. I ran out of the room screaming. Do you know what sound I made?
Oh, it was like actually it made the sound that you do when I pre-cool you, where you're like,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
But I sprinted out of the room because I didn't want Leo to see me unhappy. Like I'm like, he can't see me like this dealing with a little toe thing. And later that night we were driving and I saw someone out running and I kind of had that thought. It's like, fuck you.
You have that thought?
Just like for a second. Like,
But it's the thing. It's like those things happen,
but
it doesn't define your actions. And I think for me, that's been so huge, but also that it's a gift to have these like emotions and experiences, even the shitty ones. It's like, you know, we get to be a human and feel this whole range of things. And that's kind of cool.
Yeah. And injuries are inevitable for every single athlete out there. So try to figure out a framework where you embrace them because that is you getting stronger. Injury is just on the spectrum of adaptation. And sometimes it's on the injury end of the spectrum, but injuries are a part of adaptation.
Yeah.
Like you're going to come back stronger, even if it really doesn't feel like it in the moment.
Do you think you're going to come back from your toe? Is that possible?
No. I mean, maybe after the amputation.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can really foresee with a path forward.
Well, we have been talking about, so on Saturday, my back was pretty sore actually on the run. And I actually think it's going to be fine. I think it should be totally fine come this week. But on Saturday, it was super sore. And we were having this conversation that like, you know, Megan, like, you don't have to think about this. Like, you know, you can like set aside a time. And then you smashed your toe and you literally talked about it for like a lot for 2 hours. And I was like, see, it hurts.
Megan, my toe is the most important thing in the world right now. Like in the entire world. Like, you know, we talk about all these other sports stories. Why is my toe not on the cover of Runner's World? You know, we talked about not putting your feet on Instagram. My toe's going on Instagram right after this.
Actually, it's a that would be a really good picture for Instagram because it's pretty black and blue, that toenail.
It's pretty nasty. Yeah. Don't know what's going on there, but it's probably not good. All right. Do you want to move on to hot takes?
Yes, perfect. The toe is a great... Wait, that was basically a hot take and we're going to one.
Okay, well, I'm starting with my own hot take here.
Yeah.
Which is that chocolate is liquid fueling.
Oh, I love it.
Can I explain this to you?
Yes, yeah.
It's that chocolate melts in your mouth.
Uh-huh.
Thus, it is liquid. Thus, it can be fueled right before exercise, even if you have touchy GI system like I do.
Okay, does that parallel to other things that melt in your mouth? Like ice cream?
And oh, yeah.
Milkshakes?
Literally anything that melts in your mouth is liquid fueling.
Milkshakes is liquid fueling, and thus I can do it at 5 a.m. before I run.
Perfect. You solved the whole conundrum. But I'm actually serious about this. I've been eating one of our athletes, Allison Baca, when she was in Europe and finished sixth at Worlds. She got us, what is it, Toblerone?
Yeah. Oh, it's so delicious.
A humongous chocolate.
Oh, it's huge.
It's a chocolate that is taller than Leo.
It's dreamed big.
And we're working through it. And I've been taking the second run windows, so I'll get a little hungry sometimes after breakfast. And I'll just eat this right before I go out the door. And as long as I let it melt in my mouth, GI system is golden, run is amazing, ergo, chocolate is liquid fueling.
I love it.
Okay.
Actually, you're trying to qualify for Western States. I'm going to just have chocolate for you at Forest Hill.
You better believe it.
Yeah.
That's the fueling breakthrough. Get Precision on line one and get them to step up their game and make some chocolate.
Well, actually, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups had one with like potato chips in the middle of it. And that would be, I mean, I feel like it's got everything. It's got the salt. It's got the chocolate liquid fueling. Granted, it wasn't as tasty as I was expecting it to be.
It was incredible. And I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Okay, next one. I'm just debating which one to read. We should replace, quote, on your left for passing on trails. I run a lot of multi-use trails in the Wasatch, and I often encounter hikers who are less familiar with trails and etiquette. On your left, in my experience, has caused more confusion or been perceived as me being rude/aggressive in trying to pass. I've switched to saying, hi there, good morning, or runner back when you have a good spot. And it's been more effective at calling attention to my presence and need to sneak by with a seemingly more favorable response from the other users.
I totally agree. Because, you know, as humans, we're all directionally challenged. Yeah. Whenever I say on your right or on your left, people are always like, they look right. And I feel like it's just this thing. Yeah.
Directions are impossible.
Directions are left and right is really hard.
Yeah.
Especially when you're like scaring someone from behind, they're like, blah, 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 right?
Yeah. I like what this listener is saying. I just think get more like,
oh, get freaky.
Get freaky with it. Why say hi there when you can say you're amazing from 100 feet away? Or do you have any other ideas of things you can say?
You're looking good. That's a little too freaky. I wouldn't say that.
If I said that coming up in my winning split sports, you're looking fine as hell.
No, I usually say things like crushing it or awesome job or keep rolling, things like that.
The liquid fueling's good out here. But yeah, like have some fun with it. You know, you can just say whatever, but I agree with this person. I don't think on your left is necessarily the best thing to say. I think announce yourself loudly, far enough away that it doesn't startle people.
And people will move, yeah.
And do it with good nature in your voice and heart. And if someone responds poorly to that, they're a fucking bitch and you gotta not, you just gotta ignore them.
Well, oftentimes when people say like on your left, that's happened to me before too. And I'm like, oh my God, like what do I do? Yeah. So yeah, I think just tell them they're great.
I just freeze like a deer.
Yeah.
Ah, don't know. Okay.
Okay, I like this one. Yeah. Ice baths are hocus pocus. In the specific context of post-resistance training recovery, cold immersion is harmful.
Such an interesting take. And we slightly disagree, I think, in that ice baths, yes, in a research-controlled way, might show reductions in some adaptation types of markers and maybe some protein synthesis stuff. But the inflammation process that people hold out as the precursor to adaptation is also the precursor to injury,
yes,
overtraining,
yeah,
everything else. The problem is if you have a study that's a few freaking weeks, you don't recognize any of that stuff. So managing inflammation is important, whether that's ice baths or something else, up to the user.
And I think there's athletes that are more prone to inflammation than others. I'm sure via training logs, we could identify athletes that are more prone to inflammation than other athletes,
yeah.
myself being one of them. And runaway inflammation is horrific for adaptation, for long-term training, for injury. So I agree. Also, ice baths, I've recognized this now that we have Leo.
Yeah.
It's a great time to just sit there for 20 minutes uninterrupted. That is my new theory as to why ice baths are magical for me. I'm like, I just get to sit here for 20 minutes and do nothing. Oh, it's great. Like,
maybe I'll freeze to death here and won't have to do anything ever again.
Well, the first 2 minutes aren't great. And then you know what? The next 18, I get to sit there and just stare at my phone. It's really nice. And I don't really get to do that anymore in life. So I'll take it. It's a small price to pay for getting to stare at my phone for 18 minutes.
But to give this hot take credit, there is a lot of evidence out there that ice baths might not be productive for adaptation in some instances. But I think for every athlete, think about your inflammation management.
Yep.
And it's one reason, for example, that for blood plasma volume, I've gone more to hot tub rather than sauna. Because for me, sauna is quite inflammatory. It makes my markers, like my HRV and things, a little bit worse than it would be otherwise. Whereas hot tub doesn't seem to do that. I don't know why that is, but I'm getting the blood plasma volume adaptations.
Maybe it's because you're almost dying in the sauna. You come out of the sauna looking like a cooked shrimp. I'm like, what are you doing in there? That's too much.
But I come out of the hot tub looking like a cooked lobster.
Yeah, but like undercooked lobster.
Okay.
I just think you're in there for a less period of time.
It's probably true. So just monitor your inflammation and think about that a little bit in the process.
I love that.
Okay, before we get to listener corner, you know what we need to do?
What?
You know what we need to do.
I don't know what we need to
do. Megan, what do all am I always referring to when I talk like this on the podcast?
I'm a powerful dump truck. No, I have no idea.
Why are you a powerful dump truck? What did we take just before we got on the podcast?
Oh my gosh, I almost forgot. Athletic Greens.
Athletic Greens is the fucking best.
Well, you know what? I have my backwards hat, my hoop earrings, and I have this like upturned Athletic Greens mustache. There is a quintessential Athletic Greens mustache that happens with nothing else but Athletic Greens.
It is such good shit. So last week we talked about it in the context of stress management.
Yes.
Yeah. Also works in the sort of inflammation things. Like we were saying about the ashwagandha, which is in there that is only safe for sport in that supplement. It also has tons of vitamins, tons of other good stuff. We are such big fans of it for our athletes. Basically all the pros we talk about taking it, drinkag1.com/swap, S-W-A-P. You support the podcast there. You also get 5 free travel packs, which is something like a 20% bonus, plus a vitamin D dropper.
It's so great. Yeah, get that mustache. It's very unique and I love it. It makes me feel powerful because I'm like, there's good stuff in my body.
We should, since we get a lot of it for free now,
we
should like dump some on ourselves for pre-cooling.
No, that's magical stuff. Why are you wasting the goodness of the world?
It's not wasting it when it exfoliates my terrible skin.
What, you would waste so much in the vein of pre-cooling.
I would.
We were at the Jamestown Water Fountain this weekend and there was a whole line of people and you were just dumping some of the water on yourself. I'm like, what are you doing? These people are thirsty.
Okay, yeah. So I'm really into the science of pre-cooling.
Yes, so into and the science not, of pre-cooling and your toe.
Mid-exercise cooling. Yes. Mid-exercise cooling.
Yes, right?
And so we get to Jamestown, and at Jamestown, there's a water fountain. There's probably 30 cyclists waiting. Yeah. So I fill up my bottle with my sweet chocolate drink, which was awesome. I fill up your bottle. Then I fill up another bottle to dump on my head.
As these thirsty people are waiting.
And it was amazing.
Yeah.
I had so many more watts, Megan. It led me to withstand your Kashia attacks. It was wonderful. Totally recommend it. Okay, on to listener corner. I'd love to talk this week about the risks of love. I'm getting married next weekend, and my partner and I have been talking a lot about commitment in the face of the unknown and the inherent risk of something like marriage vows. And also how it's so worth it for all the great things that come out of being in a relationship with someone you think is awesome. So great to hear y'all's candid conversation about this after 13 years together, and a great reminder about being intentional daily. Wish you could marriage coach us.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that cool?
That's really cool. I'm honored.
I don't know if we should be coaches for anybody with marriage.
No, I don't think so.
But we
have no expertise.
But we're stumbling forward.
Yes.
As everyone is, as I think relationships are. And the reason I wanted to highlight this message is because they're getting married next weekend.
That's so exciting.
How cool is this?
It's so cool.
Yeah. And my one advice for your wedding would be, it's about you. It is not about any of those other fuckers there.
Yeah, enjoy the shit out of it.
And
yeah.
Be weird, be yourself, be fully out there. Do not talk to that second cousin once removed. You can say, peace, bye Felicia. I am going to hang with my partners and my best friends and other things, whatever you have going on with your wedding. Make it about you, because this is the start of a wonderful journey, or even better, a continuation of that journey. And start with being intentional on that wedding day.
Yeah, and I think marriage vows are a great way to do that. We had really weird marriage vows.
They were.
And they're actually framed on our bedstand next to our bed, and they're pretty great.
Have they changed at all, do you think?
Have they changed?
Like, if we would redo them, would they change at all from what they were?
There were some, like, parts in there about, like...
references and things?
References, like garlic powder and, like, yeah. airplane hair and things like that. And I think that those, like, things have changed minorly, but the principle of it hasn't.
Perfect. Okay, and now a really beautiful one from a listener to finish up. Hey there. As always, thanks so much for the love, kindness, and trail wisdom you guys put out into the world every week. It really matters. I wanted to follow up and let you guys know that I just did 2 10-mile trail races on back-to-back weekends and had an absolute blast.
Oh, heck yes.
I had your advice in my ears the whole way. Hashtag team never hike and hashtag granny gear. Helped me pass a few people and still finish really strong. After a very hard winter, physically, mentally, and emotionally, I wasn't sure I even wanted to run anymore, let alone race. But I took your encouragement to heart and I'm so glad I did. Doing so has relit the fire in me. Mm. I felt like I belonged out there. And even if I never sign up for an ultra, I feel a new sense of pride in being able to call myself a trail runner. I can't say thank you enough.
This is so beautiful. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Also, huzzah.
Huzzah.
That's freaking cool.
And it gets back kind of the injury discussion where like the physical, mental, and emotional toll of being an athlete / being a human is so huge. And just know, hold on to every little part of yourself throughout those processes. You don't have to run to be a runner. You don't have to be a kind person in any given moment to be a kind person overall. Like, you are never too far down a path to recommit to something. This listener, I am so inspired by you to get out there and do my equivalent of betting on myself with some trail races.
I love this so much. I also think the physical, emotional, and mental toll is higher the week of a race.
Yeah.
I think as athletes are going and you kind of start to think about like the existence of being a runner and the existence of, you know, what we're doing and the hard stuff. And I feel like as soon as athletes race, it's almost like that feeling is restored and there's a rejuvenation. So if you're questioning your why for running the week of a race, it's okay.
Yeah.
I think we all do. Just race and you'll feel a lot better about it.
Keep putting yourself out there. And this person also said, I'm not sure if I'll ever do an ultra. You don't need to do ultras.
Yeah.
You're a fucking beast. But I would say, do something scary.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I know they're listening for sure. And those 2 10-mile trail races are awesome. Now sign up for something that makes you shit your pants.
Yeah. Even if... it's a 5K.
Yeah.
A 5K right now would make me shit my pants.
Definitely.
Because that's really fast.
But do it.
Yeah.
And you know what you're going to have out there? The most powerful dump truck.
Oh, I thought you were going to say chocolate liquid fuel in a 5K.
Yeah. Well, it's a little rough when I just talked about shit in your pants. You know what? We love you all.
Woohoo.
Huzzah.
I am strong. There's lots I can carry. Fill up my bucket.